Okay. So, Joel, let's talk about this a little bit. You know that consequential damages are routinely requested and given in all kinds of other contracts, all kinds of agreements, license agreements, services agreements by independent contractors, and on and on and on. So why should the buyer look at an acquisition agreement in the M&A context the same way and be inclined to grant the consequential damages waiver that the sellers are undoubtedly going to request? What's the difference?
Well, the difference is one of proportionality. In a lot of the examples you use, say license agreements, for example, you know, you've got a licensor that's getting a relatively modest license fee for a piece of software, and yet its potential to cause damage is monumental. And take, for example, a license to use Microsoft Office, and it costs a few hundred dollars, or an enterprise license will cost more, but it doesn't cost a lot. And then somebody using Excel hits a calculation flaw that causes enormous damage in putting together a proposal. Microsoft simply is not prepared to take the potential to have millions of dollars of liability to a single licensee of Microsoft Excel, you know, from which they got $300 of revenue. It's just totally out of proportion. In the acquisition context, on the other hand, the price being paid by the buyer reflects the total value of the enterprise that could be injured by the misrepresentation. So that if there is, for example, the absence of this permit that causes the plant to shut down, and the buyer incurs, Keith's example, $15 million of damages for the want of a $5,000 permit, yeah, the buyer should recover that because the buyer paid for that revenue stream when it bought the company, and it didn't get it. So the risk reward ratio is very different in the M&A context.
So I get that, Joel, and I understand why. Therefore, in the M&A context, a buyer will and should be strongly disinclined to grant a consequential damages exclusion. But let's take that line of thinking a little further. How important do you think it is, therefore, for the buyer to insist on specifically including, affirmatively mentioning consequential damages in the litany of recoverable damages listed in the damages definition? Does a buyer need to go that far? Or given the way the law works, will the buyer be confident in recovering consequential damages as long as they're not specifically included, as long as they're not specifically excluded, I should say?
I think this is one where the buyer doesn't have to press for the inclusion. In fact, I'm not sure that I would think it's even good tactics to press for an inclusion. I mean, then if you have a normal definition of indemnifiable loss in an agreement without reference to consequential damages, it's clearly broad enough to reach the kinds of consequential damages we're talking about. And so, you know, the real issue becomes a normal contract measure of damages, which is the loss reasonably foreseeable from a breach not involving a special circumstance. And yes, it is, I think, reasonably foreseeable that if you're selling an unpermitted factory, it might get shut down and you might lose revenue from it. So I think that there is not a great need to include it specifically. And the danger of including it is you're inviting a seller to try to strike it from the litany, even if they can't get an exclusion, and then argue to a court from the drafting history and shows that we intended to exclude something. And that becomes a peculiarly difficult problem with consequential damages because it's not totally clear what they are. And so a court is going to be kind of confused to start with. And if they, I think it's just better from a buyer's perspective, they just go silent on the issue, have a good broad definition of damages, and be done with it.
Do you agree with then Vice Chancellor Strine's comment that the law is particularly amorphous in this area and that many practitioners don't understand what consequential damages are and what they're not?
Yeah, I do agree with that comment. And I think it's not just lawyers who are confused by it. I think it's courts that are confused by it, too. You can find cases that seem to treat very similar fact patterns differently when there's a consequential damage exclusion. I think it's just an area from a buyer's perspective to stay away from.
Right. And we saw that in the cartoon where we cited the Biotronic case in the New York Court of Appeals and how they split 4-3 on the question of whether, at least with the facts at hand, lost profits constituted consequential damages or not.